I obviously have a very strong opinion about the two candidates who are running here. One is very positive and one is not so much. If Mr. Trump is suggesting that there is a conspiracy theory that is Democrats who are in charge of voting booths, that's ridiculous. That doesn't make any sense. And I don't think anybody would take that seriously. I would ask all of you to just make your own judgment with respect to how confident you feel about his ability to manage things like our nuclear triad.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09 and it is Friday. It's August 5th, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell and welcome to another business day. We made it through another week. It is finally the weekend. Whatever you do, don't joke to anybody in Wall Street, on Wall Street today, anybody who is involved with the markets or stocks about jobs. Big jobs report coming out later on today. It's on the minds of everybody. It's on the minds of all the traders around the world, here in the U.S. especially. Will we lose jobs? Will we gain jobs? It's going to be a big barometer of the economy, where we're headed. That report will come out a little later on this morning. We're going to talk it over with Paul Nolte coming up here with our regular Friday conversation. But first, let's head to the WGN market desk to find out the overnight intel. You heard some of the numbers there from Vic about what stock markets are doing around the world. Asian stocks mainly mixed following a British interest rate cut. Investors are looking now to this U.S. jobs data to see whether or not we're moving in a positive direction or not. Investors are looking for this Labor Department data that's going to be out later this morning. Most economists say that the U.S. Should have added about 175,000 jobs in July and that the unemployment rate will dip to 4.8% from 4.9%. But again, we'll wait for those official numbers later on this morning. Benchmark U.S. crude oil fell, remains above $41.50 per barrel. The dollar declined against the yen and the euro. Have you seen the shiny new Amazon airplane? They rolled it out yesterday. Prime Air, Seattle-based Amazon, unveiling the first branded cargo plane, one of the first 40 jetliners that'll make up the e-commerce giant's own air transport network as it moves into more control of the delivery process. It started with those vans in the neighborhoods. Now we have actually aircraft delivering Amazon Prime. It's called Prime Air, and they rolled out the first of those jetliners yesterday. One note about pizza this morning. In case you're hungry, customers will soon be able to get pizza from an ATM machine. The first one's going in at Ohio University. Xavier University in Cincinnati has partnered with a French company to install the first pizza ATM in North America. We already have people working on this. We're going to figure it out, see if we can get one here at the Trib building at the WGN studios, or at least close by. Pizza ATM is an idea that's really long overdue, I think. Yesterday, LinkedIn beat Wall Street earnings. Investors very happy with LinkedIn after their deal again with Microsoft. The big question is, why do we care, really, if Microsoft now owns LinkedIn? Does it really matter what their earnings are? But they were doing pretty well. Revenue up 31% for LinkedIn after some rough times over recent months and even years. As we look to the markets, the S&P is one area of interest, and Sam Stovall is an economist with S&P Global Market Intelligence, tells us what Wall Street will be looking for today with the jobs numbers and next week.
The street is looking for a gain of about 170,000 jobs. This is quite a bit lower than the 283,000 that we got last month, but still, on average, about where we should be. So the street's looking for 170, S&P is looking for 190, so we might be pleasantly surprised.
Well, we can only hope. Weekly claims for jobless benefits were up just a little bit this week, reported yesterday by about 3,000, not enough to move the ticker one way or another. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, our portfolio manager, our portfolio expert, is with us this morning, as he is every Friday morning. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you again.
Good to be with you. Listen, what do you think? 175,000 or 179, 180? What do you think?
I think all three of those numbers are within the one standard error deviation from what we would consider normal. And these numbers on a monthly basis are extremely noisy, just as we've seen the last 2 months. So something around the 150 to 200 range, I think, won't get the markets too excited. We'll be interested to see a couple things. One, what do they do to the past months, the revisions? The revisions historically, or at least over the last year, year and a half, have been negative. And then the second part is, what do we do with wage growth? Wages have been growing at about 2.5%, 2.8%. We'd like to see that continue to gain here, get maybe a little north of 3%. And that would give us a little bit more confidence that the consumer is strengthening here and is going to have an ability to spend some money and get the economy going.
It seems that investors and people who talk about this on a daily basis are a little bit more concerned about this report than they normally are. Lots of chatter about it today. Why is that?
Well, because it really is going to set the tone for Fed policy. We saw the Bank of England yesterday, you know, pretty much throwing the kitchen sink as far as monetary easing goes. The last report that we got was a huge surprise on the upside, indicating that maybe the labor market is a lot stronger than everybody thought, and gives the Fed some reason to raise rates in the face of a potentially strengthening labor market. So, again, the caveat to that would be the GDP report that we got last week, which was half of what we expected, you know, coming in just over 1%. So, again, the labor market is going to be one important key to a Fed that may be inclined to raise rates.
We're on with Paul Nolte this morning of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Royal Bank of Scotland posting a massive $2.7 billion loss for the first half of 2016. One of the big four UK banks, RBS CFO Ewan Stevenson, blaming restructuring costs, litigation and conduct issues. The bank was part nationalized in 2008, and the UK government remains the majority shareholder. A plan to sell the stake reportedly scrapped after the Brexit vote. After rising most of July, mortgage rates fell this week, averaging 3.43% for a 30-year fixed-rate loan. A year ago, rates averaged 3.91%. Refinancing activity up 55% from this time last year. Ford Motors recalling 830,000 vehicles in the U.S. and Mexico because of a problem with a faulty spring part in the door latches that can break, causing doors to open while the car is moving. Later this morning, the government will release the July jobs report. Analysts expect we'll see modest job creation, predicting around 170,000 jobs added. Dave Packer, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It is 519. Welcome back to the program. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management on with us this morning, talking about the jobs report coming out a little bit later on. Other stuff as well. Paul, we saw a couple of other economic reports this week. The overall theme, I think, is many people are concerned that consumers are not spending money. And that's why we, I guess, are focused on that wage part of the jobs report.
That's true. When you look at the durable goods orders, you take a look at the retail sales, the reports that are coming out from the various retailers, the consumer is really not spending. And the amount of quantitative easing that goes on, the lower interest rate environment, really is not very conducive to getting the consumer to spend. So the thought is, and what we're seeing in large parts of the economy is if prices continue to decline, I'm not going to be spending money today if I can wait till tomorrow for the lower price. So that's part of the reason why the Fed is really trying to engineer inflation, because if I think prices are going to be higher tomorrow, that'll force me to start buying today. But we're seeing kind of the opposite of that in a lot of parts of the market.
We saw the parade of Fed governors begin this past week as well. And it seems that they all seem, at least for now, appear to be on the same page, that they're all urging restraint. And more people are saying they don't think there's going to be an interest rate hike this year at all. You still think it's September or no?
I think it's a possibility. And when you do look at the numbers, I think they're anticipating it. I think the expectation is for a 9% chance that they're going to raise in September, maybe 11 or 12% in December. So certainly the bulk of the world is believing that they will not raise rates. And it's going to be very difficult for them to raise rates. And the rest of the world is cutting rates. Our belief has been that the Fed will be on the sidelines much of this year. But I'm allowing for the possibility that they do raise in September, because they're looking really, I think, more at the financial markets than they are the economic data. The reason that they raised in December was not because the economic data was poor, but because the financial markets were comfortable with another rate increase. The equity markets were near highs. So the Fed felt it was okay to raise rates. We're seeing a lot of the same thing now. The markets are very close to all-time highs, very quiet, not concerned about Brexit or China or oil prices. So the Fed may feel compelled to raise rates in September, but again, it's an outside chance.
Let's talk a little bit about the Bank of England and their decision to lower interest rates and do that economic stimulus push there. Is there an opportunity here? I know you like foreign markets, and obviously this is not an emerging market, but is this a possible place for us to make money as Great Britain goes through all of this?
Oh, I think there is, and I think where you find the best opportunities, and again, there's two moving parts to investing internationally. One is the price of whatever it is you're buying, whether it's bonds or stocks, moving in the local currency. So in the British sterling or in the euro. The second part is how is that currency doing against the United States dollar? So if the dollar is strengthening, let's say, for example, the price of whatever it is you're buying goes up by 10%, but then the dollar goes up by 10%, that kind of wipes out the gain that you achieved. So it's a trickier game than it is to buy the U.S., buy Microsoft, and it goes up 10%, I made 10%. So we have to incorporate the currency, and what's happening is that the dollar is strengthening against a lot of these currencies because they're making monetary policy very easy, or a lot easier than the United States. All of that said, I think the valuations on a lot of the international markets are still relatively cheap, also the fixed income market may also be of benefit too, as a lot of the central banks buy up not only their own their own debt, but they're also buying up corporate debt. So this is something new again from a lot of the central banks in an effort to lower interest rates and force a lot of companies to borrow more money to hopefully spend and expand their operations.
If investors in Europe, the UK, start shopping around and focusing on bonds, I know our portfolios here, you like to keep us in bonds. Is that going to help us?
I think it will because, again, you know, the world is going much lower in interest rates. We're seeing it globally. We've seen it now for a long time. In fact, this is the first time since 1993 that the U.S. bond market has shown positive rates of return every month this year. Usually you get the yields going up at some point, but this year is the first one since 1993 where we've had every month so far with positive bond returns. So the long story is interest rates are going to continue to decline globally until we really get to see global economic growth pick up. And right now, we're really not seeing it in around the world, small pockets here and there, but around the world in general. We're not seeing that type of economic growth that's going to force rates higher. So interest rates can continue to decline around the world, which will boost those bond prices.
Have a question from a listener that was emailed in about earnings. We've been reporting a lot about earnings this week. And the question is, what should an investor be paying attention to, just an everyday investor, someone with a portfolio maybe perhaps being managed by you, about these earnings? What do you look for when companies report earnings? Does it help you make a decision about whether you invest with them?
Oh, absolutely it does. I mean, that is really the value, the part of the company that we're trying to value. In essence, what we're looking for is that long-term earnings growth, and the stock price is based on what happens to earnings over a long period of time into the future. One of the things that we take a look at, because as a company, I can do a lot to mess with that bottom line. It's a lot harder for me to mess with the revenue line. How much money am I, how much am I selling? So we like to look at the revenue growth much more than we do earnings growth. And revenue growth right now is flat and has been flat for a lot of companies for the last 2-3 years or so. while earnings have continued to go up as cost cutting and stock buybacks and that thing that normally will boost that occur. So we take a look at top line. We do take a look at dividend policies, and we'd like to see the increasing in dividends and want to make sure that they're not paying out too much in the way of their earnings in the way of dividends so that they can continue to raise those dividends going forward. But revenue for us is really one of the keys.
And that's why we pay such close attention to this and report on earnings. The other part of Joe's question was, is there any company you like that you've seen in the last couple of weeks report earnings that looks good?
You know, really, it's a lot of the technology companies, and it's one of the areas that we generally like because, again, as companies are trying to go become more efficient, technology gets to be a big spend to make companies more efficient. So just as you were talking about the pizza ATM, there's not a lot of people that are doing the work there. It's a lot of automation. So as general, technology tends to be a favorite place for us because we do see that very large earnings growth. Also very large revenue growth. So that's an area really that we do like here.
Paul Nolte, Kingsview Asset Management, our very own portfolio manager. He can be yours as well. Make sure you subscribe to his Nolte Notes so you can find all the information at kingsviewassets.com, assetmanagement.com. Paul, have a great week, and thanks again for being with us.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, bye-bye.
From ABC News, Tech Trends, turning garbage into electricity. Residents near Atlanta are enjoying lower rates on their electricity thanks to three new landfill gas-to-energy plants now in operation there. As trash breaks down, it releases methane gas into the atmosphere. These plants capture that methane gas and convert it into electricity. Project manager William Hauser.
One of the good things about landfill gas is it operates 24 hours a day. Landfills are operating all the time.
These three plants can generate a combined 24 megawatts of electricity, enough to power more than 16,000 homes. Georgia Public Service Commissioner Tim Eccles says the facility will pay for itself in 3 to 5 years.
I can take a whiff and smell a little trash here, but we're taking that gas that comes right up out of that big pile and piping it right in here to this building, and we're generating electricity. You talk about sustainable. That's sustainable.
With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
5:36, welcome back to the program. Good morning again. It is Jobs Friday, the big jobs report coming out a little bit later on today. We were talking with Paul Nolte about this a little bit earlier, but we want to continue the conversation, talk about the economy in general, where we might be heading. Mark Hamrick is Bankrate.com's senior economic analyst. He's with us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
It seems, I was mentioning this to Paul Nolte in our last segment, it seems that there is a lot of nervousness about this jobs report. Are you feeling that as well, like it needs to be good?
Well, I don't feel any more tension around this report than I do any other. They all are important. We aren't in the midst of a recession, so we're not looking for, you know, one of those huge moves to the downside like we saw during the financial crisis. But sure, they're all important because each one of those numbers with respect to the number of jobs added or the numbers that are implied with the rise in the unemployment rate when that happens affects real people and the plight of individuals and how business is feeling, whether it's confident enough to add further workers or feels like it needs to be cautious and therefore cannot, is hugely important. And that's why I think most of us regard this report as the single most important reading that we get on any given month when it comes to economic data.
And it's the part of this about earnings, too, that a lot of people are focusing on. June gave us a 2.6%, I believe, was the increase in hourly wage earnings. This is a good trend. Do you think that might continue? And how important is that moving forward to make sure that keeps going up?
Well, I've been saying probably for more than a year now that in many ways the wage growth component is more important than the unemployment rate and the payrolls numbers. And I don't actually believe that, but what I'm saying is that it's, you know, we tend to really focus in terms of Main Street focusing on the unemployment rate. I think Wall Street and those of us that are interested in the financial markets and the economy tend to prefer to look at the payrolls numbers above that. But the wage gains piece is very important these days because that has been one of the key statistics which has lagged during this economic recovery, and we know that tension created around that has evidenced itself in the political process, and probably for good reason. You know, many people have been left behind by the recovery. We know that there is a substantial part of the workforce that is working part-time, more so than in the past, and then there are people who aren't in the workforce either because they're long-term unemployed or they have other reasons to effectively stay at home. So, yes, we do hope that the average hourly earnings gauge remains at least firm here with a year-over-year gain of 2.6%, and if we could even see that start to nudge up, if not today, in the preceding months, that would be welcome news.
And one of my mandates here on the opening bell is to sort of be the translator from Wall Street to Main Street to people who are listening who are not in this area of the economy or they're not investors. And I try to instill upon people the graphs that we see, the wealthy, the business, the CEOs going up, 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 you, the wage earner going kind of stagnant, down, down, down. And we're seeing that too in this, in terms of spending. At some point, is this going to have to be an issue that we really focus on? Because 2.6% is not much. This is how the economy works. When people make money, they spend it, and they're not spending it right now.
Well, if you're talking about the issue of income inequality, that's hugely important, and it has evidenced itself in the retail sector, where for many years it had been the case that sort of luxury retail had been doing better, and maybe some of those that catered at the lower part of the income spectrum sort of got their share as well. We need a strong middle class in this country, and our history tells us that. You know, we think about Tom Brokaw's wonderful reference about the greatest generation, how people sort of emerged from World War II, and we had the growth of the suburbs, and we had women entering the workforce in greater numbers in the years that preceded, and all of that has really sort of been the way that we have constituted modern America life, modern American life, whether it's the fact that we now sort of have, you know, two-income families in many cases, and that's not always an elegant solution for families that need to raise children, but that's sort of the world that we live in these days. And in recent times, it seems as if the middle class has had a tougher time scraping by, and the data tells us that. And that's caused a political problem in our country because we have tended to have a situation where the middle decides, right? And these days it seems as if we have a situation where the middle is less influential, and that causes a problem because the interests of the wealthy are in some ways, not always, but in some ways separated from the interests of those who frankly need some help.
And quietly, as all of this goes on, people who think they're in the middle class are finding that they're really not, that based on this stagnant wage growth, that they're really probably in the lower middle class or maybe even the upper lower class.
Well, I don't know about that. There's some data that points to the notion that as this middle class issue has presented itself, and the debate is continuing, but there's actually been some migration to the upper part of the middle income piece also. So, you know, this is getting a bit wonky.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But the question is, how are people doing? How are we doing? And we need the job market to remain firm, if not to continue to improve. We need hiring to remain firm. And the good news is, I think, that you know, growth was somewhat lackluster in the first half of the year, averaging about 1% a quarter. We typically think of the trend in the U.S. of being around 2%, so we fell short of that. The good news, getting to that now, it may be that the economic recovery as it now stands is at least sustainable for quite some time to come. That's what we hope. And that has come despite the fact that the global economy has been underperforming and in many ways hasn't been helping the U.S.
And I didn't want to get wonky, but I wanted to transition to the next part of this. And you sort of did it for me. And that is this notion, this feeling as we are heading into this election that people are not necessarily happy with the state of things. And could this be one of the reasons why? Is their wages have not been going up? They've maybe taken another job after being laid off that didn't pay as much, doesn't pay as much. There is an undercurrent there, isn't there?
Well, I think, first of all, the severity of the economic crisis and the Great Recession probably was underappreciated by many people. They knew something happened. They saw the stock market crash, effectively. But I don't think that everyone was aware of the systemic damage that occurred and, frankly, the risk of something even more severe occurring at the time. So we're still clawing out of that in many ways. And I know some people may or may not want to hear that, but it's true. You know, we lost a lot of significant financial institutions in this country, and the Treasury and the Federal Reserve were basically the only firemen with hoses that came to the rescue of the system. Yes, the Congress did some work there in the late days of the Bush administration as well, but when you have something of that magnitude, you know, the aftershocks continue to reverberate, and I think we're still paying the price for that. So every year that we get farther away from the financial crisis, we're probably repairing some damage, but it may in fact be the way that with the global economy is now and the way the U.S. economy is now, that there is a new normal, and it's not the same as before.
And when people go into the voting booth, they may be blustery now, favoring one candidate or another. But isn't it always, am I better off now than I was 4 years ago?
Well, sure. Everybody's going to ask that, or at least they may be thinking about it, and that's going to be different for every single person. And then the question is, which of these candidates, and it's not only the president that's being elected, could potentially put me in a better position than I am now. And, you know, I do like to remind people when we're talking about this that, you know, the Congress is up for grabs as well, and it does seem as if there is a risk that if Donald Trump continues to have the problems that he has, many of them obviously self-inflicted, that Republicans could stay home, and that's going to probably put the Senate up in play as well, meaning that Republicans may or may not control the Senate after November, and that could make things very interesting, because if Hillary Clinton becomes the president, then she at least has one chamber of the legislative branch in Washington working in her favor, so to speak.
Mark Hamrick is a senior economic analyst for Bankrate.com. You can follow him there at Bankrate with his blog and information. Mark, good conversation with you this morning. Thanks for being with us on The Opening Bell.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 550 now. Dow futures pointing toward a small open this morning, higher open on Wall Street. Dow futures up about 37 points this hour on the market desk. S&P futures, NASDAQ futures higher as well, as we all await the big jobs report. Lots going on in the commodities markets as well. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning. Timely rains keep moving in, and the crop just keeps getting bigger. And as a result, we see the downward pressure on prices. In my rain gauge in Huntley, Illinois, in McHenry County last night, 2/3 of an inch of rain, and it cooled off down to 68 degrees. So we're watching the markets, and on the other hand, we're watching livestock prices fall. Steve, if you like pork chops or steaks on the grill, you should be enjoying lower prices right now, because we've seen a large drop in the price of cattle, a large drop to 3.5 month lows in the hog market, and that should translate to cheaper prices at the meat counter. So consumers who want to do the outdoor grilling, you're getting a break right now in the price.
You make my mouth water every morning when you talk about cattle and pigs, and I'm a big griller. Listen, I wanted to ask you something. We talked a couple of weeks in a row now about how the politicians haven't really been talking about agriculture.
True.
Well, one of them is now. Hillary Clinton, apparently her campaign, people close to her campaign say she's in discussion to maybe seek to adjust a regulation called the Renewable Fuel Standard. And that probably is not going to sit well with folks in Iowa and Illinois.
Well, it definitely isn't. And once again, I think it shows the ignorance of both candidates on agriculture and agriculture issues. Maybe they have forgotten back in the 70s when this all started, we had the long gas lines at gas stations because the Arab part of the world had embargoed oil exports to the United States. And that's when we said, say, we got to do something about this. And part of what we have done is develop a renewable fuels industry where we produce soy diesel fuel from soybeans. We produce ethanol from corn. But you can guess who fought that and still fights it vigorously. And that's the American Petroleum Institute. They don't want to give up 2 or 3% of their market to renewable fuels. But we have built a huge industry and have built it to the point where we can export it. But this renewable fuels that we talk about, the RFS, the standard, the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, has the decision over what percentage and how much renewable fuel we should be adding to our gasoline supplies in this country. So it would look to me like we're playing a little more toward big oil money than we are toward agriculture.
And there are a couple of sides to this. One, first of all, this would require a doubling of U.S. Biofuels to 36 billion gallons by 2022. There are environmentalists and others on the other side of this saying this is actually hurting people's ability to, I guess, eat. But I don't know. Is it? Are there arguments to be had on both sides of this?
No, there is no argument on the food thing. At one point, about 10, 12 years ago, we had this food or oil controversy. We have proven in agriculture that we can produce enough corn and produce enough soybeans. We're on the way right now to an all-time record crop in both corn and soybeans. Give farmers the financial incentive and they will produce what we need. And there is no argument on food versus fuel anymore because agriculture has proven it can provide enough for both. And we're doing that, and we're doing it in aces this year.
Yeah, so. And if you follow the money on this, it really does point back to the petroleum industry, and you really have to wonder what is going on here.
Well, we know what's going on. You know, we saw record quarterly earnings reports from big oil over the last several years before the big dip in the economy, but they didn't get hurt as much as a lot of other people. They're getting hurt now because of lower gasoline prices and lower crude oil prices, so that's why they're going to war again on this RFS standard that EPA has to decide. EPA was a year and a half late in coming up with the numbers for last year, so they're still trying to play catch up on getting those numbers out. So the industry knows what we produce in the renewable energy sector and what big oil provides. So,
in addition to grilling, I love things on a stick, and state fair season is here, isn't it? Finally.
Oh, yeah. State fair season is here. As a matter of fact, we have two great county fairs close into the Chicago area, one north, one south. We have the Kankakee County Fair at Kankakee through Sunday. We have the McHenry County Fair, which is where I'm living this morning, and that goes through Sunday. But the Wisconsin State Fair and the Indiana State Fair underway. And I think one of the fairs says as one of its eating slogans, if it can be deep fried, we'll have it.
Yeah, that includes bananas, Oreo cookies, you name it. Orion, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Will do.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us today. We will continue to follow your money throughout the morning on the Steve Cochran Show and be back bright and early Monday morning with another edition of The Opening Bell. Thanks for listening. Our producer's Mary Sandberg. Our assistant producer's Bennett Wakenight. And Bob Ferguson's here this morning on the engineer duties.